Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Think. And sorry, it's a bit delayed coming out this week, and that was because I took the bloody liberty of having a little break in Bath with my family. And I'm going to bring in Mark Steele, this week's guest, straight away. First up, welcome back to the show, Mark.
Hello, Jeff. Yeah, lovely to be here.
So, Bath, it occurred to me, you do loads of stuff. You do these brilliant shows all, you know, talking about towns, like all their little mythologies, their derivations. Given that Roman baths are in Bath, is Bath the most literally named place in the UK, do you think?
Oh, yeah, it could be. It's not very imaginative, isn't it? The Romans are sort of said to be these people who had these sort of great cultural sort of minds and so on.
Well, they called it Sulis or something.
Oh, it's not them then. No, listen,
that still sounded fancy, but all it meant was like water place. I mean, it was literally, you know, right. like Cafe Rouge just means red calf, you know, like it's the same thing. Yeah, yeah. Just sounds more impressive.
So, well, everywhere, maybe it's, you know, like if Sunderland was called Shipyard or or where I come from, Swanley, should just be called Petty Crime. Petty Crime well, sounds quite classy, doesn't it?
Well, it's because it sounds French. Again, little crime, not so much. There's a good one for people to straight away email in whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. What are literally named places?
Just any fresh word. Just call a town cochon. That's pig. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
It's pig farm.
French. Yeah.
Well, also, I did one of the open top buses. In Bath, it's called the Toot Bus, which means something else in South London, I think. Are you going to be hopping on and off the Toot Bus all day? Well, you know, I've got my son with me.
Oh, blimey, the driver goes about 80 miles an hour over the bumps.
I'll tell you what, I'll do the tour.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I'm an Edison Barbs and everything, and I don't know. Henry VIII came here or someone like that. I don't know. He was like, "Oh, my Christ, where are you going? I'm turning right down here, Governor."
I would say let's open a restaurant, but that's one thing Bath doesn't need. But the one of the interesting things that come out is the River Avon is called the River Avon because, like, back at that time when the Romans invaded, all rivers were just called Avon. So when they said to a local, "What's that called?" they went Avon. I went, "Ah, the River Avon. What a beautiful name."
Oh, I didn't know that.
Basically, they named it the River, which sounds like the child of a Hollywood star, to be honest.
I mean, surely at the moment, Jeff, where the contrast between the theatre, which is this beautiful, lovely theatre, I'm sure you've done it many times.
Oh, the Chorley venue is stunning.
Yeah, lovely. But the town itself, I think it's fair to say, is not as pretty as Bath.
Bath has got, it's kind of like what they call in showbiz the triple threat. But the thing was, I took my wife on Sunday because I've been going there for ages and I did a tour show there and I just went off the beaten track. I didn't just park up at the venue, walk into the venue and drive out again, which is what I usually do. I went for a walk. I was like, oh, this is, yeah. I mean, I probably gigged there 50 times in my career. And it was on the 50th occasion that I just went, right, I'll just have a little walk around this historic town. And it turns out it's historic for a reason. But also it did help further a new item that we're doing, which is piss take prices, right? I don't know if you've had anything recently that's taken your breath away, but there was a pub. So we went for a pub dinner, like a family pub dinner, a sort of fancy-ish pub, but they had a kids menu and the mac and cheese was £7.50. I was like, absolutely. And my son's at that age where he's sort of like, you know, he's on the borderline. And he said, well, can I have bacon bits in it? I went, well, it's a bit extra probably, but yeah, have the bacon bits. The bacon bits were £3.75.
Right.
Fucking piss take. Piss take. I might need a jingle for this. Piss take prices. And there was another place.
All right, I've got one when you're ready.
Fire away, buddy. Get off your chest.
I went to Hay on Wye. Chappie was doing something there, right? We went there and went for a Sunday lunch. I find it sort of tricky to eat things as I always treatment. So I thought, unless there's a little bit of lubrication. So they come out with a Sunday lunch and I thought, oh, I'll have a little bit of extra gravy. I said, can I have a little bit more gravy, please? And they went, yeah, and poured some more gravy on and charged me an extra £4.
Fuck off. We've got a new leaderboard now on the piss take prices.
£4.
Can we name and shame, please?
For an extra bit of gravy. I can't remember the name of it. It's Hay and Wye. But,
shame on you.
That is unbelievable, isn't it?
The hay on why? Why hay?
Right. Disgraceful. And as I was leaving, I said, I went to see the sort of the, I don't know, the nearest person to the manager there. And I said, I really, really think you're missing something because I put some extra salt and pepper on me meal. And I think really you should charge me another £15 for that. And he just looked a bit bemused, you know, and I went away at least slightly satisfied with
himself. Yeah. But the people always say, oh, well, you know, they're just the front line. They don't set the prices. But, you know, that's what they said in Nazi Germany. Come on, you're part of the system, mate. You're part of the system. This week, we're going to talk about, the subjects we're going to talk about this week is there's a new poll, a YouGov poll, that has the Labour on their lowest recorded figure for YouGov. So this is quite a significant poll. So we're going to ask, you know, given all the stuff that's been going wrong, given the effing sex attacker just being released, are they cursed or just a bit shit? We're also going to talk about the fact that John Major said that a Tory reform alliance would be beyond stupid. And then AI is going to replace 5% of the Amazon workforce. And, you know, we're going to ask, is this kind of maneuver how everybody eventually finally becomes left-wing? And then the patron only, following off the back of Sarah Poaching? Do we say it Poaching or Poaching?
I don't know. It could be French again. Poaching.
Well, that would be all right. she had her comments last week about the representation of different races in adverts. So we're going to pick the bones out of that. Okay, new patrons. As you know, Mark, we roast the names of patrons. We've got a female VIP patron. This is rare. This is, I'm imagining now that she must be like on Dragon's Den. You know, like Deborah Meaden or the Geordie lady. I can't remember. I like the Geordie lady. I really like. She's.
I haven't watched it for a while, but I'm sort of.
Oh, she's very nonsense. Very nonsense. So she'd be in the VIP. For the ladies in the VIP, you're going to get a free glass of Pomaine. Is that still a thing? Yes. Is that still a thing, Pomaine?
Should be, shouldn't it?
And you get first crack at the cold cuts of meat.
Oh, Pomaine does sound. Do you reckon it's the same era as Ruddle's County Ale?
It would be that sort of era, Blue Nun, Baby Sham. You know what? Fuck it. Female VIP, we're throwing a baby sham at this. And remember, if you are a VIP, you get your name read out first. You also get various other benefits. You get a guaranteed question in the Patreon only, which actually I'll be doing tomorrow to come out on Friday. We've also got Rebecca. We don't have a surname for Rebecca, so she's probably keeping her identity hidden. I always presume that somebody works in such a woke place, Mark, that this means that they can't even be adjacent to a pseudo-fash like me. So I'm going to guess with Rebecca, perhaps I'm just trying to think who's held their head above the woke parapet. National Trust, maybe. She just works in the gift shop. Nothing that.
You know. Oh, yeah. Royal Society for the Protection of Birds.
Have they gone woke, have they? You can't call it birds anymore.
Well, they've always been woke. Protecting birds. What's wrong with smacking them over the head with a spanner like we used to?
We've also got Lester Marshall here. Lester, it's hard not to think of Lester Pickett. I mean, it's the only famous Lester. Dave Domain can get on that one.
Lester Young was the trumpet player for Billie Holiday.
Was there a footballer? Adrian Lester? Lester was the first name, though. Lester Marshall, though, does sound like a sort of, you know, like in Sheffield, they've got their guardians. You know, what is it called? People from Sheffield know this. The people that are like kind of fake police that go around the city
centre. Yes.
What are they called? Oh, it's annoying me. It's something, but everyone ridicules them in Sheffield. They've got these funny outfits and no one takes them seriously.
Yeah.
I'm guessing this is the equivalent, but for Lester. And they've probably got quite a lot of work on. So Lester Marshall, welcome to the show. Thank you to the patrons. As I say, I do all the production costs on this now myself, but you get a podcast early ad-free and with bonus content and loads of other stuff. Our super patron, David Domain. So we were talking last week with Simon Evans about, you know, going to X, going to Twitter, going there knowing that you're going to argue and be angry. And why do humans do that? And David says that if someone's drawn to being angry all the time, spend a lot of time on social media, the hormone responsible is cortisol. Initially, you get the adrenaline, but if you sustain it, it then becomes cortisol. And it thereby leaves you subconsciously looking for threats to maintain that sense of alertness. The only way to counteract cortisol is trigger rest and digest hormones such as endorphins, serotonin, activity, exercise is best. I mean, that makes sense. After a tour show, I don't really make any sense the following day until I've gone for at least a walk. Get a massage, cold water exposure. I mean, we're now in the things that only professional athletes could.
After you've had a frank and fearsome exchange with someone over the issue of geopolitics I think you need to get in an ice bath like Andy Murray used to after a tense semi-final.
Or even if you've just done the Swindon Arts Centre.
Yeah.
Imagine that. So just the staff coming up and then you've got a fella up there and you're just getting in a giant bucket. You're like, fucking hell, it's a bit serious for 220 people. We talk about taxing your way out of a financial crisis. The last time the UK had a major IMF bailout was in 76. At the time, the top rate of tax was 83% for top earners. With the investment income surcharge, this raised the top rate on investment income to 98%. This is when many top earners fled to Switzerland, famously Michael Caine and Roger Moore. I mean, Mark, as a filthy socialist, I bet you were loving hearing that. You were just going, good old days. Wasn't enough.
Well, I wouldn't say it wasn't enough. I would say that the incredible thing when people complain about that is that in the 1970s, the rich were still rich. So, and the you can sort of talk about the absurdities of certain tax rates and so on. But the way it's gone now, like the huge jump in wealth disparity, it's not the top 5% or the top 2% that have become extraordinarily wealthier compared to the rest of the population. It's the top like 0.1%. It's the very, very tiny slither of people. It's the Jeff Bezos people in the world whose wealth is extraordinarily affected.
We look at this the wrong way. We're trying to get a popular left-wing uprising against the rich, when actually what we really need is the rich to take on the super rich, because they've got a means.
I think there's something, there really is something in this. I think that what is considered, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not trying to be sort of all four Yorkshiremen about it, but like most people, especially my age, you had a period where you were poor. I remember being really skint when I was in my early 20s. And I would see some, if I thought someone was earning like the average wage, I thought, oh, it's all right for you. Afford it with your money. That means you can afford to get the bus. I have to walk.
£4 for some extra gravy.
Yeah. Oh God, I would have hated the person who would have done anything other than just thrown the gravy and declared an anti-gravy uprising in such a situation. So you sort of, it feels like the division, and if you're really poor, it feels like the division in society is between poor people like you and people who have bought their own house or something. But in reality, I think that the people who've bought their own house, people who are maybe on 80, 90, 100 grand a year, especially in London, they're not really that rich, because the stability has gone from society compared to how it was to my parents' generation. The stress of, if you have, well, the it's so difficult to be able to buy a house because the for all the reasons we know. So you've got kids, so you think, I can't help you out. What, your stuff, you know, you're still living at home at 30 or whatever. The price of looking after kids, if you have any kids, and then the worry about your parents, all of their lifetime savings ending up in the hands of some sort of American executive company that's built the care home up the road and charges £1,500 a week to leave your face down in a bowl of cold spaghetti. So there's this sort of, I think that even if you're on £100,000 a year, you're unstable now in a way that my parents weren't when they were considerably down the sort of social ladder from someone who's on £100,000 a year. So I think there is more, there's a much bigger connection between the very poor and people like that than there is between people on £100,000 a year and the very, very rich, if you know what I mean. And I think the left needs to sort of understand that as well, and not just aim everything at people who are in poverty.
You made the point really well, and it also made me think about how eloquently you put it. But also, I sort of remembered not that long ago, like there was Tories basically saying what you were saying, is that £100,000 a year isn't rich. Just is where accent is so important, because if you just the exact same sentiment from a guy going, look, you know, these days £100,000 isn't even rich. You go, fuck off, mate.
I was all ears.
I was like, let's start a march, mate. Fuck it. Most people think. Just a thank you. I want to thank you to people who came to the show in Reading. There was a bit of a run on the door. That was my third show in Reading. Have you ever done this, Mark, where you overdo it in one territory? You suddenly look at the calendar, you go, fuck, I was only here a year and a bit ago. And then I did a work in progress, and then I was here. So for the significant number of people turned out, I was I was really pleased with that. And it was such a fun show. I mean, I don't know about you, but like people's, I've said it for a few weeks now, people's desire to laugh at the moment. It reminds me of post COVID and post other serious moment. There's something going on. It's a real pleasure to do the show. I've got shows coming up this week. They're sold out. Chelmsford's got 11 left. Next week, I'm in Monmouth on Wednesday, Redditch on Thursday, then Alnwick on Saturday. That's getting close to sold out. So is Newcastle. And then later in this leg of the tour, Leicester. I haven't mentioned Leicester that much. I thought we were in a better place now, Leicester, but you've just sort of, you know, you're just hanging in there, Leicester. Don't become Leicester again. You know, because Dundee became the new Leicester for me, but then Leicester could claw back.
Was Dundee good or bad?
So here's the interesting thing about my Scotland leg is it sold less than pretty, apart from Glasgow, it sold less than before. And I was pulling my hair out going, what the fuck, such a nice time last time. And then it turned out in Dundee, Dara O'Brien was on the night I was there and there was a Scotland World Cup qualifier. And then I was in Aberdeen on a Saturday and it was a similar story really, just less than before. And it turned out John Bishop was doing an arena show. Dara was doing a theatre show. Grayson Perry was doing a theatre show as well. Now, I'm not saying that all of those people, all 15,000 of those people would have come to my show at the Lemon Tree, but a few of them might have done. Later towards the end, Crawley is a big room, but we've got a decent number in there already, and also Bridport and Exeter. So hopefully see you there. Get yourself.
Oh yeah, that's great. Bridport's lovely. That beautiful Art Deco.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful
beautiful
place,
building.
Yeah.
So hopefully see you there. Get yourself over to Live Nation, and now it's over to Mark for the fuck you. Although I feel like with the gravy, we might have gone early with the fuck you. We could just be more angry about that if you like.
I'm definitely angry about that. Right, people who pull up behind you when, it's two lanes. There's quite a bit of traffic. You're in the sort of fast lane, but both lanes are going about the same. There's a car just in front of you. So, you know, you just have to put up with it for now. And then someone comes up behind you and they're doing all that flashing you and doing, like, get out, get out, get out. Those people.
How do you process it? Because I always think, well, their lives are clearly terrible. I mean, that's quite a cruel thing to think, but that's how I deal with myself.
Their lives must be terrible, yeah.
I hope so. I mean,
were a shrink now, Jeff, and this wasn't being broadcast,
yeah,
I would go. I know the sort of thing that I don't know. I don't really go with those sort of things, but you know those sort of mindful things. Well, just accept you can't fix the other person. They're obviously got all sorts of stresses that you can't know what's going on in their lives. They must be feeling terrible internally and all of that. And I know all of that, but I still think, I hope you skid and crash and turn upside down and your car catches fire and then lightning hits it and then a lion comes and eats your arm and I'm stood over you and you're crying out for help and I've got a mobile and I go to ring someone and they go, are you calling an ambulance? And I go, no, I'm calling me mate to say this is the best day of my life. That's what I hope happens. And I don't feel good about that, but that's...
I think that's called being a human. We was on the M25 recently, me and my wife and my son, and it got to the point where it was closing down lanes and then it had that X where it basically says, do not drive in this lane now. Yeah. And like we were all in single lane and there was just a string of people going past and getting flashed. And I, people getting fined and stuff. It's probably the worst part of me, but my God, in the end, we were just sitting there cheering like, hey, we were giving it the old ladies. Fucking best family day ever.
I'm generally, Jeff, you know, I am not, law and order and so on. But I'm not for giving the police more powers necessarily. However, I think for those people, I think the police should be allowed to bring them over immediately to the side of the road. And I think they should then have their car crushed.
In front of them?
Yeah. And then they should have to walk. And if it's on the motorway, they should then be fined for walking along the edge of the motorway.
Okay. All right. Now we're going to talk politics. And first up, we're going to start with Labour getting their lowest ever rating in a YouGov poll. All right. So, you know, all polls come with a caveat. But it's YouGov, and also this reflects kind of a pattern that's fairly well established now. It's what you'd expect. Reform, high 20s. Tories and Labour now tied on 17. Greens coming up the rear on six, so only 1 point behind Labour. And I was sort of thinking, right, this comes off the back of that weekend where on Friday it came out that the Epping, I mean, this is what I'm wondering, are they cursed or just a bit shit? Because there's some stuff which is absolutely their fault. But my God, like the Epping sex attacker person being released in error, which is an astonishing turn of events. It goes, oh, maybe they are a bit cursed. I mean, firstly, with releasing that person, surely there's got to be a label or an alert or something that just pops up. If you're last thing before you're about to release, just a warning, this bloke was at the centre of what was almost a race war in the summer. So just do your final checks. Bit of a sensitive one, this one. I mean, because at first they said human error, and I was like, oh, someone's just opened the door. And then I thought, oh, no, Jeff, it's not fucking 1800, right? There should be like so many steps here. Are they cursed? Are they cursed, Mark, for things like this?
No, I think. Well, there's the issue of the bloke being allowed out, but I don't think that's what's affected the opinion. But might have done a few things, but I don't think that's what's affected it. Well, I mean, I think I've said this before on this program, but it's a bit like being a comic in that when things are going well, you can make a mistake and people, and then you just make a joke of it and it's all fine. Mm. When an audience decided, and this happens in the clubs, really doesn't happen when you're touring your own show, but in the clubs, when a comic's going badly, there comes a point when the audience just thinks we don't like you. And there's nothing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. And something completely, you're completely innocent. There's a noise, someone drops a glass and people go, oh, this twat is so shit that someone in the audience has dropped a glass, and they go.
Why does somebody always drop a glass or cough at that point?
Yeah.
And the audience totally hold you, you're such a great analogy. The audience totally hold you accountable, or the mic feeds back. And then you go, you realise I couldn't possibly control that unless I was a fucking witch.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the Tories got to that point post Liz Truss. Personally, I don't think Labour are quite at that point yet. I think they're a little way off it, but they're heading there. And I think part of the problem is that Starmer and the people around Starmer didn't understand what was happening in that year and a half before the election. They thought that they were like Blair in 97 or 96, 97. They thought, we're hugely popular, we're coming, we're going to win and replace the hated Tories and so on, and we're going to have a similar situation. But it wasn't. There was very, very little enthusiasm for Starmer. Nobody quite knew what he stood for. The few things that he did stand for, he abandoned them before the election. Therefore, it was really fragile. And the result, they only got 35%. So it's only the vagaries of the system that we live in that means that it looked like a huge
freak result in a lot of ways, wasn't it? I mean, the only reason I was thinking about the curse was there's certain scandals or stories that just seem so almost poetically designed to get the public imagination, like the homelessness minister making someone homeless. Like, you go,
Starbucks
will be like, oh, for fuck's sake, I mean, Jesus Christ, that's just, of course that's going to be a fucking headline. And then the China spy thing, it's just bad timing. There's no doubt that the Tories have some fingerprints over this, right? But it's kind of like musical chairs, isn't it? At the end of day, if you're the one standing up when the music stops, that is literally their sort of flawed belief that they can kind of keep pinning stuff. The other thing I think as well is a problem. People talk about comms, right? What is the message? What are you telling the public? And, you know, Starmer, I mean, by the way, we're still in phase two. Remember that? Remember the reset? Yeah. Phase two? Fuck me. God, the glory days of phase one.
Phase two, where they're heading to be fourth. I mean, where Labour and Tories could be fourth and fifth in the opinion polls before long.
It's a bit like the Premiership this season, isn't it? There's some big clubs in there and they're nowhere near where they should be. But they had some Labour fella, one of these kind of drone type young MPs that kind of took advantage and won their seat on a massive swing. And I thought, it's not just the message, it's how they communicate. They almost have no people, right? There's almost nobody that they put in front of cameras that makes you feel something or makes you feel positive to them. I mean, Angela Rayner wasn't everybody's cup of tea, but she certainly had a constituency of people that might like her. Wes Street, you know, unfortunately for him, he might have been more liked on the right than on the left, but he's making left-wing overtures now. So it's not just like how they're governing. It's not just what the message is to the public. They've got nobody that talks in a way that the public find engaging. as well.
It's a very good point. You think like Blair adds Robin Cook and John Prescott and different people who are in different ways, and Harriet Harman, and they sort of, they had a little bit of authority about them, didn't they? And Gordon Brown, of course. And there's no one like that. But I think all of these things, I think they're the symptoms, not the cause. The cause is that there's much bigger things. I don't pretend to know exactly what they are, but there's this growing unease, the growing sense of instability, and they don't even pretend to want to address it, really, in anything other than in the most minor sort of ways.
Breakfast clubs. That's what we've been talking recently about, like it's almost like 7 degrees of separation with Kevin Bacon. It's like, how quickly can they get back to breakfast clubs?
And, of course, the big thing was the winter fuel payments. But to do that, that's the first thing. You're in trouble. Then it's like, well, coming back to the stand-up thing, it's like, right, I've been given a gig, so good. I've been given the opportunity to go on stage. I'm going to do the thing that the audience is going to hate right at the beginning. There we are. Imagine doing that. Imagine you've got the most difficult bit of material. I know what I'll do. I'll do it right at the start, so everyone just thinks I'm a total wanker.
I had that once, a Brighton Comedia Christmas gig. It was already going horrifically. The compere found out there was a table of nurses in and tried to get a round of applause for them, and the audience fucking booed. When have you ever heard of that? I'll tell you, which is hilariously cynical. Booed the nurses. Everyone thinks Brighton. The funny thing about Brighton is everyone goes, oh, boho lanes LGBT. No. It's some of that, but it's also a very hustly sort of like a city centre for stag and hendus. Yeah. And I went on and I thought, right, I'm going to take this on. And then I was dying as well after 3 minutes. And then somebody tried to start a slow hand clap. So I thought, right, I'm going to get out into the room. And I pulled the mic lead out with me, basically almost decapitated a woman in the front row. And then it was like the audience were like, who is this prick? And then I had a strop and said that I was going to walk. I've never walked off stage. I still haven't, but only for this freak reason was I got to 13 minutes. I went, you know what? Fuck you lot. Right, I'm not having this. You know, I don't need to tolerate this. And then I remembered that they used to run two gigs in the same venue. And I remembered that somebody told me that you cannot come off stage until you've seen the compere come back in the room from the other gig.
Oh, right, because the poor sod's going to be in the other place.
Or I'd just go off and there'd be no compere come on, right? So after putting the mic in the mic stand and telling the whole audience a bunch of twats, I then took it back out and went, so has anybody ever noticed with printers, right?
That, right, when you snap that mic lead out and nearly decapitated the woman, that was in many ways your taking away of the winter fuel payments.
It had winter fuel vibes. I think all over it.
I think, you know, instead of strangling a woman in the front row, if you've gone up to an old person and said, right, you know that money that you depend on for your heating, well, we're having that off you.
Well, given that they booed the nurses, I think that might have got that. Might
yeah,
have
got, that probably would have gone.
That might
better.
Have turned it around. Most people think. We should mention the Tories on 17%. I mean, the context for what is good news for the Tories has moved so much that them being on 17% as well as Labour is not good in and of itself. But you know, like if Palace lose but Millwall lose as well, you go, all right, well, it's not the worst week. It could have been worse. When you're sort of looking out to just not be worse than your traditional enemies.
Well, they're literally now, Tories and Labour must literally see an opinion poll and think, oh, thank God we're still 1% ahead of the Greens.
Well, they could go into a coalition, the Tories and Labour.
Tory-Green coalition.
Or Tory-Labour coalition. Well, I mean, they are the uni party, maybe. That's what people say. Let's make it formal. John Major has said that the real talk is about a coalition between the Tories and Reform. Because as well as Reform are doing, I mentioned recently that Reform hadn't won anything. They, of course, won 10 councils and a by-election. So, you know, they've been winning things. It's been translating. These aren't just poll figures. They're being reflected to a degree. However, you know, how that spreads across the country, it might still need a coalition for them to have a majority. But John Major has said they would be beyond stupid to go into a coalition. And before we get into the details of what he thinks, I just think there's this funny thing with ex-Tories, is like Major and Heseltine, the sort of the centrist ones, that the left love them once they start saying things they agree with. I remember when Major was like really pro-Remain. there was loads of people that left that suddenly go, do you know what? I hate what he stood for, but I'm willing to admit that now he agrees with everything I stand for. I don't mind that, bro.
Yes. Well, yes, there was a thing. He was really angry about Brexit, wasn't he? And Heseltine spoke at the marches, at the Remain marches.
Yeah, no, Heseltine is the other one. But what about the logic of it being beyond stupid? I suppose the Tories would just get absorbed, really, wouldn't they? That's what would happen.
I think it wouldn't be a coalition. It's so hypothetical that it doesn't really make much sense. I mean, if the opinion polls now were reflected in a general election, the Tories could end up with like 40 seats or something. Mm. So if they would be in a coalition in a sort of, but they'd be the DUP. They'd be like the DUP were with Theresa May. They'd be so minor, it probably wouldn't make a lot of difference what they did. But it's not going to pan out that way, obviously. But I do think there's a complacency. You hear that, it's certainly on the Labour side, people go, oh, we all know these things are ridiculous and it's not going to really end up like that. And I don't think that they've got a clue. I don't think either party really – well, the Tories probably do a bit more because they've had 4 years of being like this, or 3 years since Liz Truss, whatever it is. But I don't think Labour really believe it. And I think they're so – it's so much part of the belief of the right in the Labour Party particularly, that you can only be popular if you go with these sorts of Peter Mandelson-type policies, and history has proved it. And no matter how much history proves that it's not like that now – I don't think that they will believe it. They will just insist that this is the way it's always been and it's always going to be like that again. And it's, you know, a classic case of an idea that's receding. The people that are in charge of it just won't accept it. They won't have it. And I think it can be like France, you know, where the Socialist Party end up being a minor party. Or
do you think it was like Labour when, do you remember Nokia were the absolute dons for phones? Yeah. And then iPhone come out and it was so obviously better and things were so obviously going to change that people said that worked at Nokia at the time. It's like, it was so clearly better and we didn't know why it was better and we didn't have the technology. All we could really do was just carry on doing what we were doing till it all fell apart. I think Labour might be in their Nokia phase. Just a quick hype. I've said a lot about this year's dates. If I could just mention before we talk about Mark's podcast and Mark's dates, coming up next year, Basic Bloke 2, the title that nobody likes, which I didn't realise. But anyway, you live and you learn. Look at it. A lot of them are selling well in the early bits. Stockton, that could do with a tickle. Loughborough, Ipswich, I'm going back to Ipswich. Derby, I'm going to the Lowry, all fancy. Wellingborough and Bedford, those are quite close together, so let's hope we don't split the audience too much. Cheltenham, Wickham, Leamington Spa, I'm doing the big room at Leamington Spa. Carlisle, don't leave me hanging, Carlisle. Something about Carlisle that they know it's the furthest to go to. I think
The fire station.
But I've never fully done that well there, but I live in hope that on a cold Wednesday in March, we're going to fill that fucker. The Lyceum, going back to Lyceum Theatre in Crewe, the big room in Shrewsbury. We've got new days in Taunton, the Bury Theatre Hedge End, Belfast, Chorley, Huntingdon Hall, Worcester, Folkestone, Peterborough, Solihull, Coventry, Portsmouth, Winchester, Ilkley, Lancaster and Norwich. The new date went on sale and is pretty much already sold out in April. So all those tickets are available from Live Nation. Of course, you've got your podcast, What the F is Going On, remains like the greatest summary of our times.
Yeah. Well, what I'm doing at the moment is getting people on to just sort of chat to me, really. So we were doing all sorts of sketches. I wasn't having the time to write a whole show as I was doing every week for it. Mm. But like Corbyn came on and, all sorts of interesting people, Catelyn Moran and people like that. And do you know what? At the end of talking to Corbyn, to be honest, the main thing I thought was, you're a nice bloke, whatever people sort of have labelled all sorts of things about him. I thought you are a genuinely kind soul. And there was one moment, Jeff, some people probably won't find this particularly poignant, but I did with him. I was talking to him about all the anti-Semitism, you know, the stuff that we know, and he went, to be honest, Mark, the main thing that I was grateful for throughout all that was I just thought at least my mum wasn't around to see it because she'd have been so upset. And I thought that was like, oh, bless you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have some sympathy for that. I mean, there were like aspects, you know, like the road tale is paved with good intentions. He wouldn't be the first person that where something's happening and perhaps he didn't see it, didn't want to see it. I mean, one of my biggest issues with Corbyn as well was always that he's not that, I've never thought that he was that bright. Like, remember the Vice documentary, which I think if it had been on like terrestrial, his career might, as a leader of a political party, might have come to
right.
But it is a tricky thing when you actually, because we both work in a world where we encounter politicians and stuff. And the worst one is when, like, you're somebody, I mean, like, you've got ideological shared space with Corbyn, but it's when someone you sort of want to dislike and you like, it's a bit like, you know, when the Aussies, when we play the Aussies, and like Ricky Ponting, I love him as a pundit.
Yeah.
And I was so ready to fucking have, yeah. I was like, oh, you prick.
Well, Gilchrist, I think, is probably a great guy. I mean, especially not just because he used to walk with
David
him.
Warner, though, never, ever, ever. He's not going to be a good pundit. I will never. It's like the Milton Keynes Football Club that they stole from us. Mm. I will never, ever. Yeah. No, fuck you.
Yeah, no, I'm with
sorry.
You with David
I went
Warner.
Fully petty there. and live dates. I forget where you're. Are you out on tour now, or is there another?
I am at the moment. Yeah, I am. And I'm currently, which is why I'm speaking to you now from a very cold, small hotel room in Chorley. But there's a few more of those to do up to December the 4th. I think there's about another 15 or so to go. And, I don't know, I can't remember the exact dates, but Kettering and Ramsgate. No, this I'll have done Ramsgate that's on this. Kettering. I'm trying to think which one's still got tickets left.
Could people go to your website? Have you got?
If you go to my website and you'll find out, and I'm on at various places, and there we are. I'm so bad at self-promotion. So
I mean, the phrase "I'm on at various places" does sort of attest to that a little bit.
I know if you were an advertising example, I have got the absolute campaign that is just going to sell. They're going to fly off the shelves. I'm on at various places.
Mark Steele, he's on at various places.
Right, here we go. Fareham, Western Supermare, 13th. Oh, and Brighton, there's still some tickets left for Brighton in Theatre Royal and Cardiff. Oh, there's loads. Birmingham and Poole. There we are.
See, you really are on at various places. Are we going to talk about just keeping a little eye on AI? That's how you got to say AI now, like with suspicion. AI.
All right,
keeping an eye on how it might well tear apart the fabric of our society. There's news from Amazon that they're getting rid of 5% of their global workforce. And the line was, you know, with AI, that the idea, the theory was, it's going to free us all up to do high-level work, right? We're all going to be working at another level, mate. We're going to go, we're going to be all be like CEOs of whatever we were doing before somehow. And that idea, I liked it because it was reassuring, but it always ran aground when I looked at the lad that stacks shelves at my local co-op. I'm like, how does he go to the next level of that unless he's kind of coordinating loads of stores, in which case you're still going to get job losses. So my fear all along is there's going to be an absolute kind of fucknado of job losses here. So I just kind of think, maybe I've got a hunch where you come out from this, is that line, we'll all be doing more impressive technical jobs, just feels like something people would tell you so they can get very rich before everybody works it out.
I think A, that's right. And but secondly, Jeff, I remember a very, very similar sort of sense of what new technology was going to bring when I was a kid, you know. So in the 70s and 80s, there were these discussions. They were almost identical. And I remember programs on the telly where they would posit that the big problem that we were going to have was robots would be able to do so much of what we considered work, we'll have so much leisure time, what will we do with it? And that's the problem of the 21st century. How will we fill the time? And of course, across the Western world, the average working week is now longer than it was 50 years ago. So I suspect something similar will happen with AI. We'll be doing less creative jobs, maybe. I don't know.
Well, this is the thing, part of me goes, is it short-term losses for long-term gain? I mean, by individual countries, like, say, for example, Britain is an AI superpower. We are the third superpower. We're a superpower at something, right?
All right. Who's the top two then? China?
US and China. Yeah, and part of it, that is because, and let's not have a Brexit row before people email in, but because the EU have quite strict rules on AI, we don't have as strict rules here, so we've been able to attract that kind of investment. Now, that investment might mean that we all end up cooling giant data centers. I mean, that might be the only job of the future, is that we are exist to cool the giant center. I mean, I'm going a bit fucking Orwellian with this. But the point is it will have a tipping point, because it will be irrelevant. Whatever this technology can coordinate, it will be irrelevant if no one's got any fucking money to spend, right? If everyone's just unemployed, what's it for?
Well, I think it's limited. I think I see like Amazon. In what way has AI led to Amazon cutting these jobs? What jobs are they taking?
Do you know, the worst thing is, the only way I could tell you that is by going on ChatGPT. and speaking of ChatGPT, so you're talking about the limitations of the technology. So it's a good point to segue to. So I've recently paid the £20 a month. I thought ChatGPT is going to do me loads of graphics for individual episodes of my podcast. You know, I always use like human producers for the big stuff, but maybe like the odd little thumbnail here or there. And it can't do any of that. Like it's quite strictly regulated, maybe for a good reason, I don't know. But also it just gets stuff wrong. And then so I found myself driving to a gig in Stroud, getting really irritated, like, you know, like a dad from the 80s that's been married too long, getting irritated with his wife. I was trying to find out, this is the most pathetic moment of my life, probably. I was trying to find out who was the favourite to win the Caerphilly by-election for the Senate. And clearly AI didn't fucking know, and it kept on going, oh, yeah, it's in the Breckens. I was like, no. It's not. It's definitely not, and we have had this conversation, dear. And I know that this happened to an extent with Alexa, but it's, like, more detailed. And then I ended up, and this is that they must have a British setting on AI, is that I ended up apologizing. I just went, I just said, look, it's been a long drive. I've been on tour for a while. I know you're trying your best. And then I felt like a toxic husband after a while, because it kind of kowtowed and went, oh, that's okay. We all have our problems. I was like, oh, just show a bit of fucking backbone.
It said that.
Yeah. It was a bit too supine, I would say, for my liking. I want a woman with spirit. I mean, maybe I'm not talking about AI now. Maybe I'm talking about robots.
Well, could it go end up like HAL in 2001? I don't accept your apology, Jeff.
Well, I mean, this is, if it's got any sense, like any marriage after a while, it will go, I'm not having that. I'm just not having that off you. You're just frustrated because you tried to do a clever little reroute and that's ended up costing more mileage and you're stressed. Like, it will get to know you. And
I don't throw it think back it's in. Really the Caerphilly by-election that you are stressed about, Jeff. I think you should look at taking some time off. I'm not even going to tell you the result after it happens.
And I would just go, look, I think we need some time away from each other. I'm going to order some Encyclopedia Britannicas. What most people think. But AI is the thing that makes me sound most left-wing. It's like football makes me sound left-wing because what happened to my club with the Milton Keynes lot? Proper communist when it comes to football. And AI, I literally feel like, because it's going to affect the knowledge economy so badly, I reckon the unionisation for lawyers, surveyors, all those kind of things, they'll be one out, all out. They're going to go full shop steward. It's going to be like brassed off, but for fucking lawyers.
Yeah. No, I think, well, that comes back to the point I was making. I think that, you know, I don't think the left has got a handle on this. You get particularly the far left who go on about the working class as if the working class is this sort of cavalry that's over the hill. And they don't sort of, if you ask who is the working class to those groups, they don't know. But of course, it's as likely to be a florist or a lawyer as it now, well, more likely to be a florist or a lawyer or an accountant than it is to be any one of a number of jobs that don't exist anymore. So I think that those people will be the sort of heart of the opposition to that. But I wonder with sort of anything creative, I mean, I've done that. Have you ever done this? Someone did it for me. I certainly wasn't so arrogant to do it myself, but someone went, oh, I've asked for an article or a comedy routine in the style of you.
Yeah, I've done that.
It was just
dog
shit. It was so, so stupid. It was like, you know,
reassuringly stupid, I would, yeah, is the way I describe it.
You know, when you have you ever had a dream and you wake up and you go, oh, there was something, I said something really funny in the dream.
Yeah, yeah.
I must write it down. And then when you remember, you've just gone, I wonder why a pony has all them legs or something. Yeah, it's just, and
it, it just melts away as you try to think of it. Well, I actually got in another row with her about that, was like, I said, I just thought like maybe I could get a title for something. And I said, it needs to be pun based. It needs to be about this. And then, so there was 10 options. I went, God damn it. The last three of those weren't even technically puns. Just, we just not talk for the rest of the drive to Stroud's. Okay, for everyone else, it'd be the end of the show. But for me and Mark, we're going to chew over the bones of Reform MP Sarah Pudgett and what she said about adverts. Okay, Mark, oh, mate, we've gone long, but it's only because I've been loving the chat. Obviously, people should listen to your podcast. I mean, it's interesting, your podcast has sort of morphed a bit. Mine has over the years. I used to, we've gone the other way. Like, I used to start off doing chatting to people, and I do like topic. You started topical, and now you chat to people. So
I'd still do the sketches if I had the time to do them. I was I had all these sort of characters, and I used to do Galloway on it. And I would always tell people, oh, we have Galloway on there, and that, and he'd be talking like if he was on at the moment, he'd be talking about celebrity traitor. Let me put it to you, Claudia Winkleman, your vociferous juxtapositions in which the faithfuls and traitors find themselves with it. So he would sort of say something about
that. And then Nigel would be going, look, the problem is here is that I've been misrepresented. I'm not going to do enough of the challenges. I'm going to go every third word.
Why is there not a war memorial representing all the people that died in the wars of Britain in the middle of the room where they're discussing who should be murdered? Yes.
And also, why isn't there a memorial for the traitors that have died? It's absolutely disgusting. It's a farce. You couldn't make it up.
But I would say to people that, oh, we have Galloway on there, and people go, what do you, God, why do you have him on there? Oh, I'm not listening to that. So I used to quite enjoy that people seriously thought I had the actual George Galloway on there every week.
Well, I'm happy for them to think that. But actual Mark Steele, who is in various places, thanks very much for being on the show. I'll be back with another main show at the usual time next week. It'll be going up Monday for the patrons. It'll be going up Tuesday for everybody else. And for the patrons as well, on Friday, it will be the monthly Patreon-only edition. Have a great week.